Welcome to Medically Speaking, Auburn's own medical radio show with host Dr. Mark Vaughn of the Auburn Medical Group and Larry Finney.
Okay, here we are. The doctors are in. And today we have with us a physiatrist.
Auburn Oaks Skilled Nursing Center on Bell Road is a team of physicians, nurse practitioners, nurses, and rehabilitation therapists who are there during an extraordinary time in your life. We provide the necessary essentials you need to weather through the storm. Call us. The first thing we'll do is listen. Then you'll get expert advice on what to expect. You'll know that Auburn Oaks is the best skilled nursing care center when you learn more about us. Make the decision and go to auburnoakscarecenter.com.
This is Larry Finney. And as I was saying, the doctors are in. And this week we have with us as our guest a physiatrist or psychiatrist, if you want to pronounce it properly, Dr. Daniel Bynus. Welcome, Doc.
Good evening. Good to be here.
Yeah. And if you could give us a little rundown of your education, background, training, so forth, where you're from, and
let us know where you come from,
who your favorite rock band is.
You've been in.
Well, after I was born in Mars, I came to the planet Earth, and I did my training at Loma Linda University. Actually, planning to go into surgery, and had an epiphany moment my last year of medical school after I had actually already interviewed for surgery. And decided to go to the bright side of life, to psychiatry. And so I also did my training at Loma Linda University. I called them late in the interview season, and they granted me an immediate interview, probably wanting to know if I had gone manic or something. And so they really looked at me carefully, and they actually let me into the program, oddly enough.
You actually interviewed for surgery. And then changed your mind.
That's right.
During third year.
No, fourth year.
Fourth year. I'm trying to remember back to how it went. Wow. And what year did you graduate from medical school?
That was 2006.
So we're looking over at a diploma on the wall right now from Loma Linda School of Medicine. What year does that have on it? Well, or do they put the year on their diplomas? It almost looks like they don't even put their year. He would have been, let's see, if I was 96, he would have been
2008. They spell it out. You're looking for Arabic numerals.
So you actually went to Loma Linda University School of Medicine with Dr. Gwang Vaughn.
That's right.
You guys were there together.
Yeah, and I don't think I remember him. I'm sure he's a great guy. That's great. So then I also did my residency training at Loma Linda University, and then thereafter was looking for a wonderful place to practice psychiatry and ended up here in beautiful Auburn, California.
You came straight to private practice out of residency?
Pretty close. I did spend 7 months doing locum tenens work in Big Bear, California, which is about 45 minutes outside of Loma Linda in the mountains.
Was it psychiatry?
It was psychiatry.
Okay. Yes. Wow. We really got you fresh.
Yeah.
Okay. And now you're the psychiatrist in Auburn, the one that's getting all of the new referrals. In fact, your office is really busy. Are you taking new patients?
Well, we just reopened the practice to new patients. Actually, we've been taking new patients all along, and we have a wonderful nurse practitioner who's been taking new patients. But I just this week actually decided to take a few more on myself. So I'm excited about that. But the name of our practice is Beautiful Minds Medical, and we really enjoy the community of Auburn. We enjoy serving the people here as well.
And your great website is very nice because that's what we link to from our blog post about our show and what we put into the email that was announcing today's show so people can learn about it.
Yes, beautifulmindsmedical.com.
Yeah.
And I know this guy's a legitimate psychiatrist because he has a dog named Freud. You still have the dog?
I still have Freud.
He doesn't have parent issues or anything.
You know, the good news about Freud is that he never tells any of my secrets. He loves me regardless. I can even smell bad and he still licks me.
Hearkening back to the real Freud, according to Freud, do you know what lies between fear and sex?
You know, I don't think I asked Freud that question. Maybe you can enlighten me.
Fünf.
Fünf. Oh, okay. Well, that's...
See, I knew he would understand that.
Obvious.
It's a very nerdy joke, and we were going to have to explain it, but we won't.
Is that German?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so that's why I know.
That was good. That was really good. I haven't heard that one before.
Thank you for sharing.
All right. Only he and I get it. So okay. We'll just, and we won't explain it. Okay. It would take too long.
Either you do or yeah, don't. Right. Just, yeah.
Either you think it's hilarious, you're just going,
what is this guy talking about?
So after opening practice in Auburn, were there any, I know there's lots of things you learn daily in private practice and independent practice, but is there something that really stands out to you as being unique to Auburn in the years that you've been practicing here that you learned?
Well,
that wouldn't apply if you, say, went to Minnesota.
One thing that I don't know if it would apply in Minnesota or not, but one thing I have really appreciated about the community of Auburn is the support that mental health services have received. In other words, it seems like there's a huge desire to have more mental health practitioners here. And I'm not sure if that's because of the need or what that is, but I felt a very warm welcome here in the community, both from the CEO of the hospital, even our landlord over there at the building where we're renting. So it's been a real pleasure.
We are really glad to have you. I don't know if it's unique to us. I think it's a phenomenon all over the country that good mental health services is a need.
Really. Absolutely. In fact, there was an article in Psychiatric Times just a few years ago, and it said that America is short. I think it was 48,000 psychiatrists. And, you know, the question I ask myself is that really going to fix the mental health of America if we have 48 more thousand of me? You know, I'm not sure people want 48,000 more of me running around.
It also suggests that there's some sort of a required ratio of patients to psychiatrists.
Well, I suppose there is. We just may not know what it is, but there's probably some ratio.
Yeah, and I'm not sure actually what that ratio is either.
We hope it's not as great as how many primary care providers you want per per person in the population. We hope.
What is that number? Do you know what it is for PCPs?
Well, I know what I can take care of, and that's somewhere in the range of 2,000 to 3,000 patients. And so if you figure incidence of mental illness is 15%...
roughly probably about 25% in
okay.
a given year.
Higher. So that would be about, and if you could see as many patients as I do, I don't know if you have panels that big.
Yeah, no.
3,000?
No, not that nearly that big.
About what size?
Probably between 500 to 700.
Oh. Okay, so that's about 25% a year. So.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't anticipate it being that big a number.
And what if they all call at once?
Well, then I go check it myself into the nearest emergency room.
5150 right there.
That's right.
So we would like to talk about a specific topic in the world of psychiatry or maybe ignored by a lot of the history of medicine. What is that?
It is humility.
Humility. That seems so different from what we would expect a psychiatrist to be teaching us.
Yes, you know, humility is one of those interesting topics that really has to do with a character strength that has been largely ignored, especially since what I'd call the self-esteem solution from the 1960s and 1970s really cropped up. In other words, you know, back then they were saying, in order for people to be happy and healthy and have good mental health, all they really need to do is have better self-esteem. So we just need to pump people up and then they'll be good to go.
I suppose it's true for some.
Well, you know, there's always a balance in everything, I think.
Okay. But you've come across some, either some research or some teaching that's a little different from that?
Well, you know, one interesting thing is that even very secular psychodynamic type psychiatrists, even in Great Britain, are recognizing that the self-esteem solution is not always effective. You know, there's one man who has done a lot of therapy with patients and realized that overall people are actually getting more and more self-centered and very narcissistic, which is not actually helping their mental health, but hurting their mental health. And that really kind of comes out of this self-esteem solution from the 1960s and 1970s.
Because they've been watching what's come from the results of...
Yeah, well, basically, you know, what happens when people are just focused on self-esteem and pumping themselves up is that they start getting a very distorted picture of themselves, and any kind of what we'd call ego threat, meaning if someone has a different perception of who you are and your qualities, and maybe they don't think you're the greatest baseball player ever, even though you do, then that can really agitate you and make you unhappy and sometimes even aggressive towards other people. So that can cause relational issues. It can cause problems with depression, anxiety. So actually what they found is the self-esteem solution taken too far has actually led to more problems than anything.
Oh my goodness.
I was just going to say, I found it interesting that he referred to humility as a quality rather than, as some might view it, as an absence of pride. Like if you don't have pride, then you therefore have humility. But actually, it is a quality in and of itself.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And if we really wanted to sit down and define humility, what we would want to look at is what it really is an accurate perception of ourselves. In other words, some people, when they think about humility, they actually have a negative idea because they think the word humiliation, for example, and no one wants to be humiliated, right? But when you really look carefully at the definition of humility, it's an accurate, not underestimated evaluation of oneself and one's abilities.
That would be a false humility?
Yes, actually, a false humility, and I think we'll get into that here in just a minute. I would look at that as almost someone being modest, and there's a difference between modesty and humility. But to kind of round out the definition of humility, I think that it has to do with being open to looking at ourselves for who we are, openness to new ideas, feedback from other people, and taking that feedback and being willing to change in a healthy way, being flexible, in other words, and appreciating the value of all things in the context of the greater world out there.
So Clint Eastwood had it right in one of the Dirty Harry films. A man's got to know his limitations.
There you go. That's right. You know, I had a thought too. The word that jumps out to me is relationship.
Yes.
That you have to be open to others in order to have humility.
That's absolutely right. And that's one of the big differences as I've been studying into humility, that I notice between humility and pride or humility and narcissism is that the narcissist tends to cut off those relationships and really destroys relationships, whereas the humble person is actually here to engage others and listen to others and take into account what other people are saying. So it builds relationships.
Wow. Yeah, it comes back to relationship.
So I use the term narcissist. I believe that is a definable clinical term. How many actually among us are narcissists?
Well, 1 in 3. So that means 1 in 3 of us are, here.
I will humbly admit to being the narcissist in the room.
1 in 3.
No, I don't think it's quite that high.
he just drew me out.
Guilty.
I mean, I know you're going through the humility material there, but I do want to throw out that our listeners can participate in our conversation here. Specifically, what they can do is Skype in if they have signed up on the newsletter, and I should tell people how to do that. You can do that on the right panel of Medically Speaking Radio, which if you're one of our live listeners now, you can click on there and put in your first name and your email address. That's all you have to put in to sign up. But to call in, you just click the little Skype symbol on the right side of the screen on the live page that you're listening on, and you can actually ask Dr. Bynus a question right now. So go ahead. If you have questions, call in. If you don't have a question right now, but you do later, go ahead and call in when you do. And I'm sorry to interrupt.
And this would be true live listeners if you're listening live. And live for you would be April 16th in the year of our Lord 2015.
Yes.
At 7:24 Pacific Daylight Time.
Or even a little bit after.
Or even Standard Time. I don't know. Maybe I'm an hour off.
So we did, for those of you who don't know, if you sign up for the newsletter, the Medically Speaking Radio newsletter, you'll get email twice a week. And one of them will let you know what the show is about, who the speaker is. And if we record early during the week, like we are this week, then you'll know what time the recording is. So you can actually participate in and Skype in with questions to somebody like Dr. Bynus. So sorry about that commercial, but want to let them know they can call in and ask.
No worries.
Go ahead, and I'll let you know if somebody calls because I'm listening here.
Okay.
And I'll just wave wildly like this.
All right. So, yeah. Well, one thing I did want to mention, because sometimes we confuse the idea of modesty and humility. And we were talking earlier about the idea of false humility. Well, you know, modesty is actually more of an external behavior, while humility is more of an internal state. So in other words, someone could actually be quite modest on the outside, but maybe not.
Yeah. We wear clothes on the outside, but we're naked on the inside.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So something like that. So let me give you an example. Maybe there's an intellectual guy and he's very smart, and then he says, "Ah, shucks, you know, I'm not that smart." But clearly, he thinks otherwise. That would be a good example of someone maybe that's being modest because it's socially appropriate, but maybe internally not so humble.
Okay.
So we'd call that a false humility,
an inaccurate view of themselves.
Well, he didn't say inaccurate.
No.
Because he really is smart.
Yeah. He might have an accurate view of himself, but he's not maybe necessarily expressing that in a humble, or he's trying to be modest. You know, one thing I thought would be kind of interesting to go over, if our listeners would be interested, would be to take a narcissism test. Because, you know, in a lot of ways, narcissism is really the opposite of humility. So, well, maybe we should have Larry and Dr. Vaughn take the narcissism test and see.
I'm afraid it'll show.
We've already established that I am the one of three in the room.
Okay, good. Okay, well, Larry can be exempt, but I don't know. Dr. Vaughn, maybe.
Or we could both do it.
But you already have a full panel.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll do it.
Okay. So this is the Narcissistic Personality Inventory, and it was developed to measure narcissism in the general population. And there's four categories that you look at here. So the first category is leadership power. The second is exhibitionism or self-admiration. The third is superiority or arrogance. And the fourth is uniqueness or entitlement. So, okay, here we go. The leadership power category. I have natural talent for influencing people. I will be a success. I see myself as a good leader. I am assertive. I would prefer to be a leader. Okay, so that's several different points, and people would say yes or no.
I say yes or no to each of those?
Well, I don't know if you want to do it on the radio.
Can it be like graded, like 1 to 10?
I think it's yes or no.
Oh, man.
Yeah, these are...
Okay, I have to give an answer to continue with the assessment?
I don't know how hard you want me to be on you here, Dr. Vaughn.
we'll do it in front of the whole world here. Okay, I'll go ahead and say yes.
Okay, so, but... If we were really taking the test, you'd have to say yes or no to each one.
I think I would, actually.
Okay. Great. So, exhibitionism or self-admiration. I know I am good because everybody keeps telling me so.
No.
I like to display my body.
Yeah. And it looks good. Not before I lost the weight.
I like to look at my body.
Yeah.
I am apt to show off if I get the chance.
Yeah.
I like to be complimented.
Oh, yeah.
I like to look at myself in the mirror.
Yeah.
Who doesn't, right?
I guess some people don't.
This is the superiority and arrogance category. I can read people like a book.
No.
I always know what I am doing.
No.
But you're a doctor. You should, or at least pretend like you do. Uh-oh.
You said always. I was talking about when I'm not doctoring.
Okay. I rarely depend on anyone else to get things done.
No.
I can live my life in any way I want to.
No.
I can make anybody believe anything.
I can? No. Because I try to get people to believe real stuff sometimes, and they hang on to these beliefs that are not reality.
Yeah, so, no. That's hard, isn't it? I empathize with you there as a psychiatrist.
That's a common experience in medicine.
All right, uniqueness, entitlement. This is our final category. Modesty does not become me.
Modesty does not become me? No, I'm going to say no.
Okay. I am an extraordinary person.
No.
I want to amount to something in the eyes of the world.
I do, actually. Yeah, I'll say yes.
I am going to be a great person.
Yeah.
I am born a leader.
Oh, no.
All right. So, it seems like we had quite a skew over on the exhibitionism, self-admiration area there. I'm not sure what that's about, but maybe we need to
schedule
have a talk after this. So that was the narcissistic personality inventory.
And is he a narcissist?
Well, you know, I would have to tally. I wasn't keeping close track in my mind. And in all honesty, I'm not totally sure where the cutoff is. I think I was afraid to look as I was asking the questions to myself.
So there is a cutoff somewhere there.
There must be a cutoff.
We took the inventory, but that's all.
Well, my sense is just from listening to all the questions that they felt like the more yeses that a person had
were probably
would indicate strong tendency toward narcissism.
And I'm hoping I just shaved under. Where they draw the line.
I think you might have, but you might have met criteria for another disorder of exhibitionism or something like that.
Exhibitionist. Okay. You're right. But I do keep my clothing on.
Yeah. So you know, it's a fine line.
It's within the norms of what's legal.
That's true.
So you're a failed narcissist. I mean, that'll make you humble.
Or at least a failed exhibitionist.
Whoa. That would make you humble.
It's even worse, isn't it?
That reminds me of outside of the show when we were talking about anorectal incompetence.
Oh, no.
But we'll talk about that later. Okay, no. We'll tell Dr. Binus what that is later.
I think I'll run out the back door before we talk about that.
So now that we've done the inventory and our listeners know that we won't do that to them on the show, I want to remind them they can go ahead and Skype in with questions about humility with Dr. Binus.
But go ahead and call, because you're probably the best caller in the world.
You probably are. But I wanted to...
But you might be humbled if you call.
We should tell them there's something that will happen if they call. We are looking for somebody who's on the email newsletter list, because if they Skype in, they'll get this gift certificate for Breakfast for Two at Toffanelli's in Grass Valley. Up to $25 value. So
not breakfast at Tiffany's, but breakfast at Toffanelli's. Don't confuse the two.
Thank you for clarifying. Right.
It's an important clarification. Like
we're giving away an old DVD. No, we're not. It's a meal. I did have a question, and specifically my question is about the term narcissist, because I thought I had heard on the radio that had been taken out of the latest DSM.
You know, that's a great question. And there was a lot of hype whether they were going to remove personality disorders and completely do away with all of that. And they actually have kept personality disorders in the latest DSM. However, I have to be honest and say I haven't looked to see if narcissism specifically is in there or not, or if they've lumped it in another category. But either way, it definitely still exists. It hasn't erased the narcissism from America.
The reason they gave for it was that the baseline incidence in the population was too high to consider it a disorder.
That could
which goes right along with
what I was saying earlier, that narcissism is trending upwards at an alarming rate. And you know, I think it's actually the electronic age is I'm all for electronics and I use them myself, but I think the way that our society is using electronics more and more is it actually is promoting a lot of this narcissism, because everyone has their own laptop, their own iPhone, their own, look at the iPhone, right?
Selfies.
Taking selfies and
Belfies.
Yeah, whatever that is. I don't even know what that is.
Okay, Belfies are people who take a picture from the posterior.
Oh, yeah.
And they post those. Okay. I mean,
I don't know how that would...
I don't watch those.
I don't know how that would increase people's pride and narcissism.
I'm suggesting that Dr. Vaughn may be one of those people, because it said, I like to take, I see myself in the mirror.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. He should know all
over
about
the shoulder mirror stuff. Shot there.
I'll try it.
Yeah. Okay. Don't post it.
He's not shy.
We actually do have somebody on the chat function in Mixler, which is what we use for our live feed. Somebody wrote in with a question. do narcissists have a tendency to use, that's in quotation marks, use other people for their personal gain? Do they have difficulty keeping long-term friendships?
Absolutely. The answer is yes to both of those. Narcissists have a very difficult time with any kind of long-term relationship because they're really focused on themselves. And if somebody no longer promotes me as a narcissist and they're actually saying something that might be truthful but doesn't fit my picture of myself, then it's a threat towards me and I don't want to even talk to you about it because obviously you're a liar. Or, you know, maybe we'll even get in a fight about it.
Wow.
They just want to surround themselves with acolytes then.
That's right. They want cheerleaders only.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Well then.
Yeah, I have a lot to think about there. Especially since I know who wrote the question.
You know, one thing that our listeners might find interesting too is there are differences between men and women when it comes to humility. Would you have guessed that?
No.
I don't know if I would have come up with it without giving it a lot of thought.
So many findings have shown that blank, men or women, rate their own overall intelligence and mathematical intelligence significantly higher than do blank.
Oh,
men over women, I think.
Yeah, I'd definitely say men over women on that.
Men rate their own overall intelligence. They're both correct. Okay. See, there you go. That is the study they did on humility in men and women. They found that men rate themselves better. And
okay. And then if they were to take mathematic tests, does it prove that out or not?
It actually does not.
Okay, there we go. There's the answer.
There's the problem.
See, we needed that.
Data has thwarted us again.
Overall intelligence. Now, the mathematical, I'd have to double check because there might be a slight advantage for men, statistically speaking. But I know overall intelligence is same.
Yeah. And that's something that we're working on overall in education is to empower women or girls in school to go ahead and be good at math, even though there's this societal idea that, oh, you shouldn't be, or you're just plain not. And there's a lot of programs specific to that, books about trying to empower women to go ahead and own math if you're good at it.
Yep. And that's what we should do because, you know, going back to the whole humility idea, that's part of humility is helping people to actually realize their strengths and their weaknesses and not having this wrong conception of who you are.
Oh, now that's interesting. You're saying that humility is for somebody to appreciate how good they really are at something?
Absolutely. And that's the really interesting thing about humility is that it's not just looking at, oh yeah, you know, I'm a humble person and other people are good too. No, it's actually appreciating the gifts that we have as well. So it's Charles Spurgeon said it, I think, very simply and succinctly. He said, humility is to know oneself.
Wow.
And that would include your strengths too, right?
I always think of humility as taking things down a notch to what they accurately are, not raising up that, hey, I'm good at math.
No, actually, humility is partially being honest with what we're good at as well.
Embrace your gift.
That's right. That's right. You know, it's interesting. I don't know do you guys want to hear a little bit about some of the benefits of humility?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, because they've done lots of studies and they've found that relationships, like we've been talking, are better. You know, humble people are more likable. Actually, here's an interesting study. They did three studies on generosity, and they actually found that in all three studies that humility predicted greater generosity. Isn't that interesting? Why would you think
I would not have anticipated that.
Why would you think that humility might improve generosity?
Well, because the humble person isn't thinking in terms of, I'm just going to spend whatever I have or use whatever I have simply for my own purposes. I have enough to share.
That's right. I mean, I think part of humility is not only knowing yourself, but, you know, knowing ourselves in the context of others. In other words, appreciating even other people too, and realizing that we're not the center of the world, which is basically what you're saying. And then we say, okay, well, since other people are equally as valuable as me, then I want to share with other people. I want to encourage other people. So generosity is a actually very highly associated.
Yeah, I think a humble person would be able to say to themselves, well, I don't need that thing, or I don't need to spend that much money on this item, or whatever. Use it for something else.
Charity. Or I don't need to get like a pedicure every day, right?
Right, yeah. Who needs that?
Or $3.50 coffee.
Yes, exactly. Well, wait a minute.
Is Starbucks, are you saying that it's a narcissistic promotion here?
If you're spending yeah, there is. There's actually
texting a question. All right.
Another through the chat function here on Mixler, the writer writes, I've heard that humility comes from strength. Is that what you mean?
Okay, so humility is a strength. And what I would say is that it does take great strength to be humble, because when you are humble, then you're taking a really honest, hard look at yourself. And you're willing to see the weaknesses as well as the strengths, of course. And so that can be hard, because that means that, okay, if we see something that we don't like or we need to improve, then we need to either, you know, accept that, hey, that's just the way I am, or we need to start working on that. And that takes strength.
You know, I've run into people, though, who kind of have the opposite thing. It sounds like a humble person is one who's self-aware. But then I've run into people who do this thing where they'll say, well, I'm really not very good at anything, or, you know, whatever. And I think what they're trying to do is draw you out and say, well, no, you're actually very good at things. For example, whatever.
That's right.
That's not humility.
That would be a false modesty or a false humility. Mm-hmm. And someone's being overtly modest on the outside, but, you know, inside they're really just itching for a compliment to boost their self-esteem.
Well, do you suppose this, you're probably at this point catering to a generation who has gotten soccer trophies and trophies and ribbons at every game they've ever been to.
Whether you win or not, right?
Whether you've won or not. Everybody's in first place.
Yeah. Which I think is a problem nowadays, too, because then basically we're really promoting and we're saying it's okay to just have a lukewarm performance and everybody wins, and it really decreases the people's urgency and feeling of need to actually work on their weak areas and to actually face those head on and be willing to work hard to become better.
Celebrating mediocrity.
Yes.
Right. It's a problem. More wisdom from the movies, the kid in The Incredibles. If everybody's special, nobody's special.
That's right.
Right.
One of the greatest lines.
Yeah.
Now, another interesting thing about humility is not only are you more apt to give, and by the way, that means it would be good to have humble friends, right? Because then they give us stuff.
I'm going to go out and look for some really humble friends.
Yeah.
I think all the narcissists are going to come looking for humble friends. Right.
That's what will happen.
But you're also actually better at receiving from others. Isn't that interesting? Because we sometimes think, you know, humble, that I'm just going to, I wouldn't receive anything from anyone else. I'll serve everybody else.
Right. Yeah, I won't take charity.
Exactly. But that can actually be a form of pride, to because oftentimes people have feelings of shame and guilt when other people are giving them something, like, oh, I should have done this myself or something like that. But receiving from others and being grateful for that, feeling loved by that gift, that's actually a sign of humility as well.
So how do you instill, I don't want to get ahead of the game here, I don't want to jump to the punchline, but how do you instill humility in people therapeutically or whatever? What do you tell your patients?
Well, there's some exciting things you can do to actually instill humility within yourself or other people.
You don't mean humiliate.
Well, I suppose in some instances that
would work.
Yes.
Marine Corps drill instructors are excellent at it. But that's probably not humility. What you had in mind.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. By the way, I did want to mention before we get there, though, that overall, even romantic relationships and long-distance romantic relationships work better when people are humble. And bosses do better when they're humble because they actually, their employees respect them more, even if they're not the best boss. If they're humble, they're
more. I've had both kinds.
Yeah.
So you know exactly what you're talking about.
I've been both kinds.
And, you know, even dying, we can die better when we're humble. Isn't that interesting?
I have no idea how you measure something like that.
Yeah, well, you know, they looked at what they called the quiet ego as exemplified by humility. And their hypothesis is that that it would buffer this death anxiety. And five studies looked at that. And as the whole, on the whole, they actually found that this noisy ego, which would be, you know, the opposite of humility, was really promoted that death anxiety, while the humility, the quiet ego, actually allowed people to transcend and to die quieter. In other words, to not have that as much of that anxiety about death.
Okay.
So it's pretty interesting. Yeah. So learning humility, you know, one of the most important factors, and this is, I guess, not too surprising when you really think about it, but I thought was very interesting, is the theory of attachment. Attachment is very important. When I say attachment, I'm talking about a healthy bond between a parental figure and a child. Because when we have that healthy sense of security, that healthy relationship between a parent and a child, the child can start to accept feedback, even if it might not be positive feedback all the time. Maybe the parent tells them, you know what, I love you, but this is something that you could really work on and improve. And that helps to foster humility, because then they start understanding, okay, I can still be okay with myself, even if somebody's giving me some feedback of something to change. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, but one thing that they found in a parent-child relationship that can actually foster pride instead of humility is when the focus is more on the outward, like, performance. And so, in other words, when the parent is encouraging the child to compete for the best, maybe first place in a race all the time, or, you know, compete against others and look at other people and compare themselves with other people, that actually fosters more narcissism and pride versus looking at more of the qualities that they can work on themselves and saying, hey, this is something that would help you to be a happier person and that sort of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Overall, less competitive.
Yeah, actually.
I actually saw a friend of ours who does some daycare work. I was watching a parent at the daycare center. Okay, so kid one takes the toy away from kid two. Kid two takes it back. And the parent says to the other kid, who is now toyless, fight for it. Oh, encourages their little toddler. I mean, these are little kids. Fight for it. Fight for it. Like, wow, there's a very different parenting style.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
That's what we call the ultimate fighting championship parenting style.
That's right. Wow. Put those babies in an octagon and let them go.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's definitely one way that humility can be fostered. But there's other ways, too. You know, one of the important ways that even we as adults can start fostering humility is during awe-inspiring experiences. Let me give you some examples. If you're in...
Fireworks?
Yeah, that could be.
Grand Canyon visits?
Grand Canyon visits, or in the mountains, like just going up this huge mountain, and it makes you often feel pretty small when you're in the middle of nowhere and you're on this big mountain.
Walk-off home runs to win the National League Championship?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Actually, that is watching... people that are great at something, that can be very humbling. Like if someone is an excellent musician, for example, or like you said, an excellent baseball player or an excellent basketball player, that can really be humbling because it helps us realize, wow, I'm really not too good. It helps us kind of put our own abilities into perspective.
There's always somebody better than you.
Yeah.
They did one study that is kind of interesting too, where they looked at people doing extreme sports, like base jumping, for example, mm-hmm. big wave surfing, extreme skiing, waterfall kayaking, mountaineering, solo rope-free climbing. And they found that humility actually did increase when they realized that nature in this extreme way is far greater and more powerful than them. So that kind of put
themselves. Are these people who stopped doing it?
Well, you know, the thing I was a little concerned about is that the study did not actually look at the mortality of the participants. So.
Yeah, well, yeah, heavy duty storms tend to make me see my place in the universe.
Yeah. Or big monster waves that tumble you more than you think is possible, disorient you and pound you.
Yeah. So
if you were to summarize this in one take home bite, what would that be?
Well, if I was to summarize this whole thing in a nutshell, I would basically say our society is moving more and more towards narcissism and towards self-esteem and towards pride, looking for just boosting ourselves up so that we can feel better and have a better life. And that's the idea that a lot of people have. But what the scientific data actually shows, and what I think a lot of us, when we really look at our lives and those people that we've seen that have been successful in life, and when they, what we realize is that actually humility, which is being aware of our limitations, seeing ourselves accurately, is a much better way of finding true happiness and true peace and true joy, because it connects us better with others, allows us to have healthier relationships. It allows us to even receive more from others, forgive, be more forgiving, be more present in our lives, and also to be able to work on our weak areas so that we can become better human beings in this world today. So I really would hope that all of us take a solid look at, you know, our own narcissism and see how we can become more humble.
Well, that is an interesting point, though. Would the narcissist seek you out, though? I mean, because they're narcissists, they think, I'm cool, I'm fine, I don't need help, right? You know? So, or would their narcissism, aside from being narcissistic, would they have, I don't know, additional problems? Would they become depressed? Would they come to see you from something else?
You know, it is actually fairly rare that someone with only narcissism would come and see someone like me, because they don't need help. You know, they're self-focused and they're happy because they're very great. But sometimes, because of the relational instability, that can lead to some secondary problems. And occasionally they will come seek help, but it's more for the secondary problems. And oftentimes, unfortunately, the narcissism is not always something that they're too willing to work on.
Oh, maybe it's their significant other or a family member, something that says, it kind of forces them to go seek help. Says, you know, I can't take it anymore. You need, you,
or
me,
let's
we
go
both.
Get counseling.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And some of those people will eventually take a look and say, well, okay, I'm especially if you can show them from maybe a little more objective standpoint, like giving them the NPI, the narcissistic personality inventory, and showing them, hey, look, you know, there's some areas here that really show us that this could be a problem. And here's some data that shows that shows that it can interfere with healthy relationships. And are you willing to really take an honest look at this and realize that then, you know, if there's a drop of humility there in that narcissistic person, then they might be willing to look at that.
Through. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Put down your hand mirror and come with me to the psychiatrist.
Your selfie phone. Oh, this has been good. Thank you, Dr. Bynus, for speaking on humility. I think it's a very timely topic, and I think our audience is really going to give us a lot of feedback on this. I do want to tell people how they can give the feedback, and that's just simply write in the comments on the blog post at medicallyspeakingradio.com, where they can also sign up for the newsletter on the right side of the screen. We look forward to having you back again in the future.
Well, thank you. It's been a real pleasure to be here. I appreciate the invitation, Dr. Vaughn, and also Larry. And it was wonderful to talk about humility.
We're really glad to have you. Anything else you have, Larry, this week?
Nothing else. I'll have a colonoscopy scheduled later, but
okay. Make sure I give you the recorder.
Okay.
All right. Until next time, this is now Dr. Bynus,
Larry Finney,
and Dr. Mark Vaughn telling all of you to stay in good health.